Okay, my first lecture is on ventilation this morning. Ventilation disorders. Ventilation and, yeah, they're fine. They're both the same. See what we got. If I need to put up more, I sure can. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, let me see what I got. Maybe I uploaded them wrong, you know? Maybe I missed one. Okay, bronchitis. Anybody have a patient with bronchitis? It's a COPD, right? Okay. It is a ventilatory problem. Why is it a ventilation problem rather than a respiration problem? Because what is the pathophys behind bronchitis? Bronchitis is what? Inflammation of the bronchi, right? Yeah, so if the bronchi is inflamed, there's a problem of air getting in, correct? So those of you who cared for a patient with bronchitis, and it is considered a COPD, chronic bronchitis is, but acute bronchitis, many of you have had it, right? Secondary to a cold, as we talked about upper respiratory diseases. Bronchitis is not uncommon as a secondary disease. Okay. From an upper respiratory, it moves down. Cough, right? Chest pain, fever, malaise, pneumonia. Okay? The lung parenchyme is what's inflamed, bronchi. It can be community-acquired nosocomial or opportunistic. Now, are you clear on all these definitions? Community-acquired means you can catch bronchitis. It can be contagious. It can be nosocomial, right? Within a hospital. Remember what opportunistic means, right? Living in your body, taking an opportunity to become infective or pathogenic, right? Got it. How about pneumonia? We've all dealt with a pneumonia patient by now. Lobular pneumonia, bronchopneumonia, interstitial pneumonia, millenary pneumonia, all having to do with where in the lung the fluid is, where the infection is. And you're listening to lungs now, which is great. And what are you hearing when you hear when there's some fluid in the lungs? Crackles, yeah. What's going on when we hear crackles? You understand what's the path of on? Good, yes. Yes. Yeah. Anybody have anything else? You're close? You got it, but yeah. Anybody have another clearer explanation? It's simply the air pressing against the fluid. So the alveoli tend to pop because they're pressing against. There's that pressure. That's all. And that's why we hear those crackles, which are a hallmark of pneumonia, right, in your assessments. I'm really hoping you all have the opportunity to hear that this semester. Generally, most commonly, I would say, in the lower lobes, right? So you're having some nice definition of lung sounds. They may be diminished. If someone is obese, they're probably diminished simply because you can't hear them. The lungs may be ventilating just fine. But if you can't hear them, then the lung sounds are diminished. They may be diminished because someone's breathing shallowly. They have an abdominal incision and they're being very careful about their body and breathing shallowly. So why do we use an instead of spirometer with pneumonia? Well, to prevent pneumonia. What are we doing? What's the goal? Someone's talking. Yeah, so what? We work them. We get the air all the way down into the lower base of the lungs. That's why we encourage people to take in those deep breaths, thereby filling the lower cavities of the lungs, right? Pushing the alveoli out, exercising them so we don't get the fluid buildup and the atelectasis. And this is, I can't tell you how important it is. It's really, really important. And it's a nursing task. So if you see an instead of spirometer there, that's one thing you can definitely do. to encourage your patient, to help your patient not get a pneumonia. Commonly a secondary infection from what do we most commonly see pneumonia in the hospital as? Surgery, right? It's a surgical complication. Because especially with abdominal surgeries or anything, people are real careful with their bodies, so they breathe shallowly. Right? They don't want to upset anything. And what's happening, they're primed for infection because they're in the hospital with all this bacteria floating around. They've often had their bodies open, right? Some kind of invasive procedure where there's a chance for bacteria to get into their body. They're immunosuppressed because of the stress, the physical stress their body's gone through. So we really have to keep those lungs ventilated, correct? We're going to do a good job of stopping all these patterns of pneumonia. I don't expect you to know the patterns of pneumonia, just so that you see that they're all different. So it's an inflammation response that results in alveoli edema. So you're getting swelling of the alveoli. There's some serous escudae, blood cells, fibrin. It can be patchy or it can be consolidated to one lobe. So when you look at an x-ray of pneumonia, what are you going to see of a patient with pneumonia, what are you going to see as a positive diagnosis? You have any idea? Yeah. Good.
White.
Because nothing can pass through, so it's white. It's without color. It's nothing. So you see these white, and it may be a whole half a lung, or a whole bottom of the lung, or one whole lung, depending on what kind of pneumonia. You see white. Okay. Or white patches. It's globular. Is that what the one is? Patrick? No, globular is the entire. Bronchial pneumonia is patchy. Okay. So you may see patches, you may see a whole area. It's white in an x-ray. Just a little aside. Manifestations. Did your patient have chills, rust-colored sputum, pleural plain, all that? Yeah. Okay. Why the rust-colored sputum? What do you think? Correlate that with what do we learn about bowel? When there's bleeding in the bowel, what do we see? We see dark blood, right, in the stool. So we do hemocults. If you're seeing rust-colored sputum, again, you're seeing the dry blood. Because as the alveoli try to breathe, try to open, the capillaries may rupture. So you may have a little bleeding. So they're coughing up rust-colored sputum. And pain in the pleura is common. Limited breath sounds, yeah, they're breathing shallow, they're protecting that area. They can't get the breath throughout the entire lungs and take a full breath. Crackles, rails, dyspnea, cyanosis. Why does dyspnea and cyanosis make sense? Right, not getting enough, so you're going to compensate, right? And cyanosis, why are they looking blue? Getting enough lunch? What kind of compensatory mechanisms do you think are going to be going on in the body when this is happening? Very good. Increased ventilation, tachycardia, yeah. What's happening to the blood pressure? Very good. Yay! I'm impressed. Low-grade fever is scattered rails. There are atypical presentations where people don't have all these classic signs, but these are your pretty classic signs that you're going to see. Pneumonia. There are viral pneumonias. Those are the community-based ones. The flu-like, headache, fever, malaise, and patch pneumonia, basically, as well. Pneumocystic. Pneumocystic is a little different. We see it in AIDS patients often. Aspiration pneumonia. Now, this is what we're worried about with your general population and people who have trouble swallowing, right? At dysphagia, we're worried about them aspirating, and the ultimate concern is aspiration pneumonia. Because if you breathe some of your dinner into your lungs, what's going to happen? Yeah. Certainly an opportunity for infection, especially if you're immunosuppressed, as so many of our aged are. So that's our big concern, is aspiration pneumonia. Many people die of aspiration pneumonia. Who was telling me about a patient they just sent home? Marine General? Was it? Who was it? An older lady that had aspiration pneumonia, that had aspiration precautions, and she basically decided to send her home and not do any more tube feeding. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Well, our question in pre-lab was, why are they just, she's, okay, now they put her on palliative care, she's on aspiration precautions, and now we're just going to send her home to aspirate and die? We're going, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And then upon further examination, we learned that the patient wasn't taking anything in by mouth anyway. So they had put in a feeding tube in order to get her nutrients. So they were just stopping the feeding tube and letting nature basically take its course and letting it die. Because people do so often stop eating at the very end. That's one of the stages when your organs slowly shut down. And eating is, of course, part of that. You have no appetite, no desire to eat. So it wasn't really like, because the student said, well, what, we're just sending her home to die of aspiration, to get aspiration pneumonia and then die of it? Because she couldn't eat without aspirin. But no, a little more tricky than that. I told you my story about the college student, right? And drinking and vomiting. Did I tell you that story? It was interesting. It was when I was in practice in the Midwest in a college town, and we had this patient come in. I couldn't figure out what was going on. He had this rampant infection, and he was going down really fast. Within a few hours, we sent him to the ICU. At the end of the weekend, he died. He was admitted on a Saturday morning. By Monday, he was dead. We had no idea. Autopsy revealed that he had died of aspiration pneumonia. He had died of a bug that generally is in the GI tract, causes gastritis, right? So he had a little stomach bug, food poisoning or something, right? He was at a party Friday night, vomited, passed out, laid in his vomit, aspirated it, then got this stomach bug into his lungs. It was virulent, and he died in 2 days. Okay, so yeah, that's my ultimate aspiration pneumonia story. You normally think of it as elderly people who aren't swallowing well. Don't limit your thoughts to that. Don't let it. That's why when someone is at risk for vomiting, you know, what do they teach in the CPR class? To put him on the side always, right? Always. If his buddies had thought to put him on the side, he'd be on the side, he'd be alive today. Okay? So don't let your friends, if they're drunk, fall down and lie like this, okay? Put him on their side. Don't let them lie face down. Put him on their side. So if they end up vomiting, they won't breathe in. That's my lesson for the day, okay? Protect your friends from death and aspiration pneumonia, okay? But it was the weirdest thing. We could not figure out what was going on. We couldn't figure it out. What's going on? This guy just, I mean, engaged in partying, but so, I mean, that didn't have anything to do with this huge infection that he was displaying. And then this weird bug that should not have been in the lungs that was from gastric secretions. Lovely, huh? You can get abscesses, bronchiolectasis, gangrene of the pulmonary tissue. All from aspiration pneumonia. Lovely, huh? And you can die fast. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, we see this. This is fast. We see it in adults. Adults manifest high fever, chills, headaches, malaise, muscle aches. This is the kind of person who may get in with acute respiratory infection or lung infection quickly. We quickly put them on antibiotics and we hope they're going to be okay. So that's basically what happened to this guy that died. He got a very strong, acute, severe respiratory infection. Okay, and he died from it. His was from aspiration pneumonia. It may be all those other, it may be community acquired, it may be nosocomial, and it may be from aspiration or something that you do, and it may be opportunistic, but acute. Shortness of the breath, non-productive cough, dyspnea, and hypoxemia, obviously. Right? Hypoxemia, you're not having what? Oxygen in the blood, right? Obviously, because you can't breathe enough to have all those little hemoglobin molecules, those red blood cells that are now called hemoglobin, right? Right? You can differentiate between hemoglobin and hematocrit, can you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The hemoglobin is the oxygen molecule, which is oxygen attached, correct? If there's not enough oxygen available in the lungs, it's not going to be picked up. And that can happen from any severe lower respiratory infection. Lung abscesses, all right? An abscess of the lung, everything you would expect. Okay. TB. We're seeing some TB, again, in our immigrant populations, from our immigrant populations. Anybody had TB in the hospital? Generally, they don't let students deal with TB patients, only because of the special masks that the nurses wear. And they generally isolate these people really fast if there's any suspicion of TB. Fatigue, weight loss, anorexia, low-grade, afternoon fever. Dry cough, night sweats. You may very well see it in the hospital. What's inhaled anthrax? This is a scare a few years ago. Spores, yeah, spores. That are breathed in and can be lethal, generally lethal. It was thought to be a biological weapon. It is a biological weapon. But it was something that we were very concerned about a few years ago. Anthrax. Because it basically could be sent in an envelope, right? And opened up. Yeah. Okay. Just so you know what it is. I hope you never see it. I hope you never have a case of it in this country. But it can be a bioterrorist weapon, which is kind of just a whole interesting thought. That you can send spores around that will kill people. Get into their lungs and kill them. Pretty scary. Okay. Obviously, cyanosis, septic shock, meningitis. Histoplasmosis. You may see this. More common in areas that have birds, not necessarily chickens, more like pigeons. Anybody know what histoplasmosis is? Any idea? The reason I'm bringing this up is it mimics TB. Okay? So with tuberculosis, anybody know anything about tuberculosis? Except for the fact that it's mostly in immigrant populations. In TB, a tubercle is formed. And it's part of the lung tissue actually dies off, and you're left with this white splotch on an x-ray because it's dead lung tissue. It's a tuber that's walled itself off. So people that have a history of TB, you're going to see that tuber show on x-rays, even though they may no longer be manifesting any signs of the disease. The reason I bring up histoplasmosis is it also has tubers and presents very much like TB. It's common with people who have worked around pigeons and pigeon farms, that kind of thing. And occasionally you see it, and it's a differential diagnosis for TB. So someone may say, yeah, I've had a history of histoplasmosis, not TB. So you know what they're talking about. If the physicians think that they may have TB because of the white splotches on their admission edge. Pleuritis, simple. Inflammation of the pleura. Pain with deep breathing, coughing, shallow respirations, that makes sense, right? Because if your pleura is inflamed, you want to breathe shallowly in order not to move it and cause pain. Diminished breath sounds, limited chest wall movement, and you hear a pleural friction rub. Okay, so that's one thing you're going to hear if it's pleuritis. You're going to hear that the external part of the lung moving against the internal. You're going to hear that. Friction when they breathe. So if I don't know, you'll have to look up the breathing sound that you hear when you hear pleural friction rub, but it's definitely indicative of pleuritis. I can't think of another time when you would necessarily hear that sound, that rub sound. Pleural effusion, excess fluid in the pleural spaces, okay. Heart failure. and the fluid backs up into the lungs from the heart. You can also see it with liver or renal disease and connective tissue disorders, pleural effusion, pleural edema, pleural swelling. And again, what's your problem? You can't take a deep breath. So much so that it could kill you if you can't take enough oxygen at all. Right? Pneumonia, atelectasis, tuberculosis, lung cancer, trauma. Obviously, dyspnea, pain, shortened breath sounds, dull percussion. Now, why are you going to have a dull percussion tone over the affected area? What do you think? What's a dull sound? Like this. Right? This is dull, right? Dull. Look at this. I'm pushing against a glass here. There's air behind that glass. Nowhere behind the desk. Sounds dull, right? Exactly. So if you hear dull, it's because the fluid's solid. Nowhere is genuine. So someone with pleural effusion, if you're hearing a dull sound in the lung basis, you're not hearing crackles like you're with pneumonia, but the alveoli are trying to open, you're hearing consolidation. There's no air, absolutely. Not a good example. Maybe tapping on the window would be better. Yeah. Okay, there's some sound. It's not dull like this. Okay? Yeah. Good. I mean, good for our discussion. Yeah. Right. Good. So you heard that dull sound versus where air can pass through. And it was quite obvious. Did they put in a test tube? The drain? How did they do it?
She hasn't put it in, but I guess they
put it on suctions? Interesting. Perfect. Exactly what we were talking about. Yeah. You can. It's so cool about the lung, you can really hear. You can really hear what's going on. So if it's dull, I mean, if you're percussing and it's dull, that's because there's nothing there. I mean, there's nothing. There's nothing to emanate a sound. There is something there. The lung is consolidated. There's nothing to for the sound wave to vibrate in. It's solid. That's why it's dull. Versus not. You heard it. Cool. Pneumothorax. Air in the pleural spaces. This is what your patient had in the case study last week, right? She had spontaneous pneumothorax. So you know all about that. Can result from trauma, which we talked about. It can be of iatrogenic causes. You can accidentally puncture a lung during the procedure. Hopefully not. And your case study had a spontaneous pneumothorax. So you guys are pretty well versed on pneumothorax since last week and how they're treated. Your patient last week had a spontaneous pneumothorax. Remember, she was pain, shortness of breath, obviously compensatory, increased heart rate, respiratory rate, asymmetrical chest wall movement, right? So that's one of your assessments. Is the chest moving symmetrically? Or do you really see one side moving more than the other? That's part of your assessment, isn't it? Asymmetrical chest wall movement. If it's not moving the same, it could very well be from a pneumothorax. One lung is inflating. Traumatic pneumothoraxes can be subtle, can be masked by a primary injury. You see this in the ER a lot. Secondary injuries are missed because we're so concerned about the primary problem. So a partial pneumothorax may not be recognized until the trauma victim is back up on the floor. And the nurses pick it up in their assessments. So this is the kind of thing I want you to be really aware of. Listen to the lungs closely. Start learning what normal sounds like. And that's truly all you're expected to know, is if something is really sounding odd and not normal, then you're going to call the MD. Okay? But it's our job to pick it up. And nurses commonly pick up secondary problems particularly after traumas, such as a traumatic pneumothorax. Tension pneumothorax is a presence of hypotension, distended neck veins, the central trachea, the unaffected side, shock, the tension pneumothorax. Pneumothorax blood. So the pneumothorax is for effusion, risk of shock, which is bleeding into the lung tissue. Anybody had anybody with chest trauma? Broken ribs, that kind of thing? Chest injury is a leading cause of death from trauma. That makes sense, doesn't it? Because people can't breathe. So if you can't exchange gases in the lungs, you're not going to be able to get any oxygen to the body. So it's a primary cause of death. One big problem is acceleration, deacceleration injury, as well as direct mechanisms. But when you're in cars, when the lungs are crushed against the steering wheel or something. Very common. Right. And some of you have been in the ED, right? Seen a little trauma? Maybe? A couple of you? A little bit? It's a whole different world there, isn't it? A whole different kind of nursing. Rib fractures. Anybody have any experience with that? No one's fractured a rib? Yeah. You're also healthy. Pain on inspiration, that makes sense, right? Because what happens when you breathe in? Your pitch goes out. That would make sense. Pain, coughing, diminished breath sounds, rapid, shallow respiration, bruising. Crepitus. What's crepitus? Remember that word? Creaking. Yeah, crepitus. So if you're listening to breath sounds from a trauma victim and you hear some crepitus, there may be a fractured rib that nobody caught. Okay? So that's something you would pick up on your assessment. Okay? Failed chest is kind of interesting. We have paradoxal chest wall movements. Okay, so the chest, the ribs are broken in an opposite way. It's kind of interesting. Just another example of a trauma. Pulmonary contusion, obviously shortness of breath, chest pain, copious sputums, everything you would expect. What else have we got? Smoke inhalation. In the ER, you might come across this. But one thing that you need to know is cherry-colored skin. That's what you see. Everything else you would expect, you know. But carbon monoxide poisoning, that kind of smoke inhalation, you see a cherry-red skin. People present that in the ED, you know it's carbon monoxide. Okay, what else? Near drowning, circulatory impairment. Death can occur within 5 to 10 minutes, but it takes that long. So if you can get the body out of the lungs, or at least some of it, or get air into the lungs and oxygenate the brain, many people survive drownings. Just a little bit from ED. Let's see. What else? We talked about lung cancer before. That's about that for ventilation. And I think I have something else for you. We have another little video thing. Ventilation. Oh no, we're gonna have a break, is what I have scheduled next. See, today is quite staged. Want to take 10 minutes? Sure. Go jump around. I have a musical interlude for you. Okay? I know. I'll have to load that up right this second, won't I? Did I load two with the ventilation? Did I load the ventilation twice?
Yeah.
Why didn't you guys tell me?
I didn't realize.
I'm so sorry.